If you had come by my office this Friday at around noon or 1 o'clock, you might have been tempted to ask me if I was all right, because my office looked like a small explosion had taken place inside of it. Books everywhere, pamphlets, files, papers scattered everywhere. And you might be wondering, what is going on and what has happened, and are you in fact all right? Because this does not look like a good thing. Truth of the matter is, it is indeed a very good thing, this chaos that was there at Friday at around noon, and really is more or less still there, though it's been cleaned up just a little bit. Because the good news that is going on right there is that my office is in the process of a transformation. It is a transformation of becoming the place that I would like it to have been for the last 2.5 years, a place where I am comfortable to be present in it, and a place where I had hoped that you all would also be comfortable to come and visit and be present in it. But the truth of the matter is, for the most part, over the last 2.5 years, that space has been somewhat chaotic, somewhat cluttered, somewhat crowded, somewhat cacophonous, if you could put music to it. And so, there is a transformation going on, and I have a very clear vision of the sense of welcome that I want it to be. I have a very clear vision of how bright I want it to feel, and some of that is going to have to do with the walls may get a new coat of paint, the floors may get some treatment, the window coverings may get some treatment. There may be all sorts of things that will happen to brighten it up. But first I have to deal with the stuff that occupies that space with me. I see Mark nodding his head, because Mark and I have had this conversation many a time about the stuff that occupies the space of his apartment. I see my wife nodding her head saying, why is he doing it here? What about at home? It's not a pretty sight. I was going to leave the windows open so that you could walk in and see just how ugly it was, but it's just not a pretty sight. And here's the reality. I have a vision, though, and that vision guides me. That vision guides me as to where I want that space to be and how I want to be in that space. And in a much broader scale, because I'm talking about 200 square feet, and the writer of the book of Revelations, John on the island of Patmos in exile, is talking about the entire universe. So a much grander scale than my 200 square feet of my office. The book of Revelations does a very similar reality. It paints a very unpleasant picture. The first 20 chapters of Revelation basically say the world is a mess. First century Rome is a destructive, brutal place for people to live. It is a place where people are struggling to even have any reason for living. And the church, which is supposed to be a new opportunity into this space, is not really doing a whole lot to change it. It is timid. The church is not willing to step out. It is willing to stay back in the shadows. And basically, all is going on in this terrible, difficult way, and there's not a whole lot that makes it very pretty. And then we hit Revelations 21 that Jim just read for us. 20 chapters of doom and gloom, and then we hit 21, in which the writer of this book says, but I have a vision. I have had a vision. I have been given a vision. And his vision is broad and grand. It is of a new heaven and a new earth. It is that which has galvanized church communities for the next 20 years. And I suspect before he put pen to paper and he just saw the images of his head, inside his head, inside his mind, that probably part of what he saw was like the psalmist who wrote Psalm 8 saw. A world in which there is unbelievable harmony between all that God has created, whether it is the stars and the moon and the sun or the animals or the birds, the humans, in all things there is harmony all working together. And in many ways, that is what John, the author of the book of Revelations, is talking about. A new heaven and a new earth that is as it was in the beginning when God creates. and pulls everything into harmony, everything working gloriously together. As it was then, so shall it be in our future. And all the things that have made our lives so difficult will be taken away. There will be no reason for mourning. There will be no reason for tears. There will be no death. There will be a sense of harmony. And this is the vision that has guided John, that has guided him and his community, and for the next 20 centuries is in many ways what we have worked towards as people of faith. And there are those that say, you know, wouldn't it be easier if we just sort of had an apocalyptic sort of moment where God just comes in sort of like what happens with the Noah story and goes whoosh and destroys it all and starts over. And maybe when John is writing this from the Isle of Patmos in exile, maybe that's what he's hoping for, is just such an apocalypse, that it is so bad that all we wish is for God to come in one fell swoop, destroy it all, and start all over. But if that's what John was waiting for in that first century of the early Christian church, it didn't happen. The apocalypse didn't happen then. And all people who have waited for that apocalypse over the next 20 centuries have found themselves not getting the apocalypse that they wanted. And maybe today, with what we are doing with the climate, with the hair finger, with the trigger finger that we may have on nuclear weapons, we are indeed closer. But I wouldn't necessarily count on it, because I really believe that part of what is the process, part of what is going on, is that there is a process of getting from where we are, where things don't look very good, to that vision that John outlines of a new heaven and a new earth. And it is that process that is important. How we get there is a call from God for us to be engaged. John doesn't just get to say, here's the vision, now it will be. We have to get to that vision. The author of Proverbs says, a people without vision shall perish. That is our vision. What John has created for us of a new heaven and a new earth is indeed our vision, but there is indeed a process to get to that. And I return to my office for just a moment to think about it. Because that very ugly sight that is there in my office right now, of a place that is chaotic and discordant, there are realities that are applicable. Truth of the matter is, 2.5 years ago when I moved into that office, it was not an empty space. It was not a blank tablet. It was filled with furniture that I believe precedes Chrissy and Ian's father's time here as a minister. And he started in 1987. The furniture is the same and was there before him. The colors on the wall and the colors of the trim that is there may well have preceded him as well. The flooring preceded him as well. And it is not just those things. The place was also filled with all the stuff that the ministers who preceded me, both those called and those who were interim, had decided that it was wise to leave behind, of which there was a lot. And the truth is that probably at some point in their ministry, they felt that this was very essential, very valuable, and very important, and therefore they have it. And perhaps they left it behind for me eventually, because they felt it was so important that I needed to see it as well, not knowing who I would be. But perhaps what's the true reality is it was no longer important to them, and they didn't want to take it with them. So what did they do? They left it behind and they filled shelves and they filled file cabinets with all of this stuff that now is my opportunity to look at and begin the process of those who've read any articles about decluttering is making the piles up. Those that go into trash, those that get shared, those that given away, and those that you keep, of which this is probably the smallest pile of all. And indeed, that's in fact what I'm going through. It is as if the same thing that we do with the rummage sale, and the theologian Phyllis Trickle says that every 500 years, the church goes through a giant rummage sale, getting rid of the things it no longer needs, just as I am doing in the office of getting rid of the things that had meaning at one time but no longer do. The church goes through a giant rummage sale. 500 years ago, the Protestant Reformation was a giant rummage sale in which Martin Luther and his cohorts came to the church and said, there's stuff going on here that needs to not be going on anymore, and we need to get rid of it. And for half of the Christian world, in fact, they got rid of it. And the 500 years before, in the great schism in the year 1000 or so, there was another rummage sale in which we ended up with the split between the Orthodox churches and the Catholic Church because there was stuff that needed to be dealt with and wasn't being dealt with. And right now, in this, the 21st century, we are dealing with a giant rummage sale in the life of our churches and the life of spiritual institutions. In the 30-some-odd years in which I have been an ordained minister, the United Church of Christ population nationwide has dropped by more than 50%, from over 2 million people nationwide to less than a million, to around 800,000. And that could be echoed by almost every Protestant denomination, those same statistics, as more and more and more people now identify as having no spiritual background or no spiritual inclination, or are done, once had, but are no longer. These are the nuns and the duns of our world. The nuns of those who no longer have anything, and those who had a spiritual tradition, and they are done with it. The world is having to deal with the fact that the institution of the church, which once was so central, is no longer so central. And churches, like ourselves, are having to deal with that very reality. And we are asking those questions when we do the strategic planning that we are doing, when we look at the fact that when we gather in our annual meeting and we pass a budget, more than 50% of our budget will deal with the maintenance and the upkeep of our facilities. And when we ask the questions that says, if that is true, to what end are these facilities being used? Are what we're doing preserving a legacy? Or in fact, is there ministry that shall emerge from those facilities that we are maintaining and preserving? Those are the questions that 50 years ago churches did not necessarily have to ask. And denominations are having to ask that same question, because denominations can no longer just say, well, it's because of who we are that people will come to us. There was a time where a Methodist would never marry a Baptist, a Presbyterian would never marry a Congregationalist, because they were seen as so different. And now they are not seen as distinct at all. They are seen as dinosaurs, and denominations are trying to understand, how do we go forward and still be the church in which all are one? There is a rummage sale going on in our world in the same way that my office is being dismantled of the things that are no longer necessary for the ministry and for what you called me to do. But I must own some of this, because it's not just the clutter of those who preceded me that have made it cacophonous and cluttered there. It is also my own. 2.5 years ago, when I came to this church and began and set up in that office, I came loaded with more than a dozen boxes of books. And I came in, and Kelly looked and said, what's all that? And I said, well, these are all my books. And boxes of books and mementos. And basically, all I did was I took what was the contents of a box and threw it on a shelf, and took the contents of a box and threw it on a shelf, and did nothing in terms of actually analyzing what I was throwing up on the shelf, because this is what I have done for the last 30 years, from one house to another, from one career to another, is just take the stuff, box it, put it in the next place that is given to me to put it up there. And as long as there's lots of shelf space, which my office has a lot of, then there is space for all of that stuff and I don't have to pay attention to it. But here's the interesting thing. When you're dealing with shelf space, that which is on the front of the shelf, is the most valuable real estate. Because what you put on the front of the shelf is what you are going to see. What is in the back of the shelf, behind the books, behind the mementos, you don't see. And if you have a lot of stuff to fill every single shelf, you're never going to see what is behind until you start to move things around. I wish I had brought a change of clothes to my office on Thursday and Friday. I should have known if I was doing this on Thursday, do it on Friday, but some of us aren't so intelligent. Because when I got to the started moving the books that are mine, the mementos that are mine, what did I find? That behind those, there was a lot of stuff that had taken up residence in 2.5 years that could not be seen. There was a lot of gecko poop. there was a lot of cockroach residue. There were gecko skeletons. There were cockroach skeletons. I am a person that does not really get bothered too much by dirt and filth. My wife, again, can testify to this reality. It bothered me. But I couldn't see it because I had so filled the valuable real estate at the front of the shelves that I couldn't see what was behind until I started to move it. And when you start to move it, all of a sudden, that which has been there in the shadows begins to come quite clear indeed. And you think about the world that we live in right now. Is that not some of what we are experiencing? Did we think that when we elected an African American to be our president in 2008, that therefore all racism was gone in our country? We have seen that as things have been moved around, that in fact it is not gone at all. Did we think that because we passed voting rights and civil rights and equal rights and all those different rights, that that meant inherent privilege that went with skin color, that went with gender or whatever, would just automatically disappear? We are discovering that indeed it has not. That indeed that when we move things around, it is there waiting to be seen. Did we think that because we look at an economy in which all the economic indicators say this is good, high GDP, low unemployment, that that means that everyone is doing great? Indeed, it is not. The truth of the matter is that when we move things around, we then see what we haven't been able to see but was always there. And then we have to deal with that. Now, in an office, a broom and a wet wipe will go a long ways to helping remove that residue of that which was there and allow me to start anew. In our world, there's a whole lot more engagement that we have to do, but that's what we are called to do. And lastly, if you look at my office, you will see that, in fact, it kind of gets uglier before it gets better. In order for it to become that place, that vision that I have for that office space, in order for it to become that space, there's a whole lot of discordance that has to happen. And if you look in there right now, you can see that in process. Now, there are positive signs in there. I have found books that were given to me that I've wondered, where are they? Well, as I've moved things around, I have found them. Nicholas Kristof just wrote an article at the end of 2019. That was an article that said that 2019 may go down as the best year in human history. And he said, exactly that. What? But the truth of the matter is, when you look at statistics, in the 1980s, about 42% of the world was dealing with starvation and dealing with a minimum amount of income that would not be enough to keep them and their families alive, and that number is now at 10%. That if you look 50 years ago, the rate of literacy was less than half of the world was literate, and now more than 90% of the world is literate, and the biggest change that has happened is amongst women. And what we know is that the greatest form of social empowerment that has ever happened in history is when women are empowered and when women are educated. So you can look, just as I can find this book, this is, oh, I'm so glad I found this, it was missing. We can look and we can see that there are bright spots on the horizon in which it all does at times look quite discordant, because the truth of the matter is, even though 2020 has a really nice rhythmic sound to it, it feels so much more harmonious than 2019. The truth of the matter is, in these first few days of 2020, we have come to realize that it may get uglier before it gets busier, before it gets better. We look to our neighbors in Australia and we see a continent on fire, a reef, that beautiful barrier reef that is dying, dying, dying. And that is a huge, huge canary in the coal mine of what is happening to our climate in this world. We know that we do not feel a whole lot safer because of the actions of what have happened in the Middle East in the last few days. We know that at this moment in 2020, it doesn't look so very pretty at times. And yet, that space there is my inspiration because I have a vision for what it can be, a place of welcome, a place of brightness, a place of open, a place of contemplation, a place of action. I have a vision for that, and I know that John in the book of Revelations has a similar vision for the entirety of the universe. And we are called to be engaged in the process of getting us to that vision. We are not called to give in, although it may be tempting. We are not called to give up, even though it may be tempting. We are called to engage. I think about here we gather at this table, joined together in the communion, and I think about that Last Supper. And I think about how utterly scary the world must have felt, how utterly discordant and chaotic the world must have felt when those 12 disciples are sitting around the table and Jesus is talking about his death that is about to come, his betrayal that is about to come, that they look outside and they know that there are people right outside that door that want nothing more than not just his head, but their head as well, and how chaotic that must have felt, and how just a few hours later, how utterly discordant the world must have felt when they are there at the foot of the cross, seeing him gone, seeing him dead. And yet, what Jesus knew, what the disciples came to know, is that is not the end of the story. My chaotic office at this moment is not the end of that office's story. The world's chaos at this moment is not the end of the world's story. There is work to be done. And what the disciples learned is that they too could be imbued with that spirit of love, with that spirit of peace, with that spirit of healing that would come to them, that would be present to them, and they could go out and they could transform not only their own lives, but the lives of the community around them. And yes, John, when he's writing in the book of Revelation, is saying they're not doing so well. And so here is the vision, he says, that we must point to reactivate ourselves, to gather into that vision. And so as we start 2020, and we start 2020 around this table, perhaps that is what we need to do, is we need to reactivate that vision that we have. A vision of a world that is in fact defined by the love that we can offer to this world. A vision of a world that is defined by the peace that we offer to this world when the world seems to want to go in a different way. A community that gathers together, not just in prayer, but in action together. That is what we are called to do. And so when we gather around the table and we hear the story of what happened that night at the table, we know that this is a story that is our story, that we are being invited into that story. It is not a story that ended at that table. It is a story that went into the next day and the days that followed it into the early church community. That becomes our story. And so we know that it is that on that night in which he was betrayed, he took a loaf of bread and he took it and he broke it. And he said, "This is my body which is broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me. Give of yourselves that others may be able to have life as well." For that is what we are called to. And in the same way, he took a cup and he poured into that cup the fruit from the vine. He said, "This is the cup of salvation. This is my blood that has been shed for you. Do this as well in remembrance of me." And so we come to this table as the people, the descendants of that community of faith. We come to this table absorbing the message to give of our lives that others may have life. We come to this table knowing that even in the most difficult of moments, there is hope on the other side, that there is new life that is always promised. And our task, our gift, is to be part of that process of bringing ourselves and to others to that new life. Let us come together and join together in these gifts of the table. The bread is gluten-free.